Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. We will bring you breaking news from Boston as it becomes available throughout the day. Right now, we would like to speak with Rick Matthews, director of the National Center for Security and Preparedness and the program director for the New York State Preparedness Training Center. Mr. Matthews, thank you very much for joining us this morning. I appreciate it.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Thank it you. It is a delight to have you with us. Matthew serves as an adjunct faculty member in the Department of Public Administration and Policy, where he teaches in the area of homeland security and preparedness. Is there such a, you know, we were just listening to the press conference that took place in Boston, and we heard about the heroic efforts of the first responders and of the situation of those who were immediately on the scene. And obviously, I mean, you can never be fully prepared for something like this, but it seems as though, days and weeks and months and years will tell us the true story, but it seems as though you're about as prepared as you can get for something like that.
I think so. I mean, obviously, if we don't continue to stay vigilant, continue to stay trained, we tend to get rusty in our skills. I know here in New York, we help with that, and we train a large number of responders every year in how to respond to events very similar to this, either involving, you know, mass casualties and or post-explosive injuries, things like that. All that's designed to not only help, you know, provide new training, but also keep their skills up to speed, so to speak, so they are able to respond as quickly as you saw in Boston.
How does that training take place? What is the, because I can see it getting rusty. You know, you take one course, but it's something you have to learn over and over again, because obviously it's not on-the-job training, thank God.
No, that's true. And when you look at training, the spectrum of training, most people think of training, they think about classrooms, and classroom training is certainly an important part of it. They learn basic information, and then we have training that involves skills, where they learn new skills. The big thing that we do here that I think is probably leading in the country is what we call scenario-based training. And scenario-based training is where we bring together responders of different types of functions, law enforcement, EMS, say, and bomb technicians in one course I'm thinking about, and they train together in realistic situation where we provide situations that are very realistic, they're objective-driven, with very well-trained role players, and immerse the students, the responders, in that environment where they have to make critical decisions and apply their skills. That's about as close as you can get to what you mentioned as being on-the-job training.
Their job, when you think of the role that they have, is what? Because it seems that it's multifaceted and obviously depends on the situation. But you want them to accomplish what in that role?
Well, a couple of things. One, they have to always be aware of other potential attacks or other potential hazards, not even just from terrorism, but other types of things that can occur, so they can keep themselves safe and safety around people around them. The second thing is, obviously, they need to focus on their particular missions. If it's EMS, they need to focus on the care of the injured, and in that case, deciding and sorting, if you will, which is called triage, those that are the most critical from those that are less critical, so that we get the most critical and taken to definitive care as rapidly as possible. So law enforcement, it's designed either to go after the shooter in case of an active shooter situation, securing the scene, investigating the situation, and protecting everybody there from other harm.
And because they are first responders, and it may or may not at that point be a crime scene yet, there is also a lot of, these are the people who are observing what has happened, and I assume they're also the ones who are going to provide the initial information as to what the scene was right before and right after whatever occurrence takes place.
That's exactly right. One of the things we train responders to do is to be very careful about disturbing the scene any more than they have to. That involves everything from what they touch to what they watch, where they walk and so forth, what they move, and to be observant for details and things that might help the investigators. Obviously, the most important thing to do is to, you know, render the place safe and take care of the injured. But right after that, it's going to be protecting the crime scene and protecting the potential evidence that's there among all the debris.
When you look at a situation like the Boston Marathon, where you have thousands and thousands of people, and you have a large crowd, and obviously security was at the maximum there, and yet something like this still happens, which reminds you maybe so much, not so much that there was a lapse in security, but more so, at least in my mind, that there is never a guarantee that you can stop something like this from happening.
Well, you're right again. First of all, you're right. You can never, I think, totally stop it. We always have to be aware that it could occur. And also keep in mind that here in America, you know, we absolutely value our rights and our freedoms. That's what America is about, you know, land of the free. And in doing that, when you balance security with freedom to move and do things without the government obstructing us, you have to you know, develop some kind of a balance. Could a canary be more secure? Well, probably. If you search every individual that went through an area, you know, strip search everybody, do all those kinds of things. You're not bring anything into the area, you know, but what they were, you know, not bring anything into the area. Obviously, that would minimize these kinds of things. On the other hand, it wouldn't be a very fun place to be. And so, you know, we balance those two things. And I think, like you said, I think they did the best they could do in security. I think this is true everywhere. You know, it's we always say, you know, terrorists can be only have to be, you know, lucky once. We have to be right every time.
In your role and in your career of working on counterterrorism and working in Homeland Security, and that's still, I mean, yes, 11, 12 years in, but we're still, that's still a new term to us, isn't it? I mean, Homeland Security, of what that means and what our obligation is as a government, as a society, and even as a people, of what that means.
Right. It used to be, we all felt that, you know, Homeland Security meant keeping the enemy away from the United States. We felt like once you're inside our borders, relatively safe place to be. That all changed with both the first Trade Center attacks in 93, you know, the Murrow Building bombing in 95, and then later on, of course, with the Trade Center 2 and the other attacks there in 2001. We've learned that terrorism doesn't regard the borders, and it's a very difficult thing to protect. So therefore, Homeland Security is, how do we protect us, you know, inside our borders? And it's a very difficult task. And again, particularly when you look at the United States, that where we have all the freedoms we have, and we enjoy the freedom of movement and those kinds of things, none of which lends itself to being more secure.
When you look at a situation like what is unfolding in Boston, and we learned during the first press conference that took place at the FBI, that the FBI was the lead agency, give us a sense of how important that is, of then what becomes the chain of command and how that works, of who reports to who and how that becomes an organized pyramid.
Well, the first thing is, obviously, when the initial event occurred, the most important thing is keeping the area secure and the rescue of the casualties. And that's very much a local response. The city of Boston did that, did a great job of that. Once we look at investigating crime, then it becomes a matter of what type of crime it is. Is it a minor offense? Is it a violation of a state law? Or is it a violation of potential federal law? In the case of terrorism, it's always a violation of U.S. law, and therefore the FBI has a lead in investigating potential terrorist acts in the United States when they suspect of violating U.S. federal law. In that case, they have the lead in terms of the actual terrorism investigation. Now, ultimately, if the investigation turns up that it's not an act of terrorism, that's not going to be the case this time, but if it were, then reverts back to traditional law enforcement investigations. Keep in mind that things like if it's a violation of U.S. law, that the rules of evidence, those kind of things vary a bit between states and what the U.S. courts require. So that's one of the reasons. And again, to get the full weight and the assets, resources of the federal government behind this investigation. So in that case, it's a team effort. They will coordinate everything they have, work very well together. They do it all the time, every day anyway. It's just the actual, somebody has to be the lead. In this case, it's the FBI.
Do we had this discussion earlier in our program, and there's been some mail going back and forth about that use of terror. A lot of this comes from the president not initially using the word. I don't know. I mean, the word is certainly being used now. And I guess I ask this as a two-part question of, one, does it really matter what we call it until later? Or is it important to have that term associated with what happens when there is a bombing?
Well, it's not just the bombing, but it's a very important term because, again, that's what triggers the federal investigation, the FBI, which in a case like this, you want to get the highest level investigation, if you will, to start. And then if it ends up not being found to be a violation of U.S. law in terms of terrorism, then it can be handed down to the state to continue on with the investigation. But obviously, initially, we don't know. You don't know how bad it is. You don't know if there's any other attacks, any other events to it, what's going to be found. So in this case, and again, with terrorism, you don't know if it's just confined, this case, to Boston. So again, with the FBI's involvement, the entire country becomes the playing field, so to speak, for the investigation.
So when we look at what happened in Boston yesterday, two bombings and three people dead and at least 150 people injured, we can say that that was an act of terrorism.
Exactly. And again, act of terror is, a device was used, explosive device, and then you look at trying to cause panic, influence things that meets the definitions of terror, no doubt about it.
In your work, how important is the instrument, is the device, whether it be a gun, whether it be a bomb, whether it be a plane? I mean, how important is that in the response? Because obviously, I guess it depends on how many people it affects, right?
It does. I mean, the type of obviously, if the intent is to kill a single human being, any number of weapons can be used.
Right.
If the intent is to injure or kill a lot of people, then the type of device becomes more important. Some devices, some tools or instruments, as you said, can have other impacts, other effects. Can destroy property, they can do other kinds of things. In this case, with a gunshot, there's typically the bullet, if they find it, and that may be able to trace that back to a particular gun. Case of an explosive, first of all, they can determine sometimes what was used. If they're lucky to find pieces of the device that detonated, then they can. The investigators can sometimes then tell from that potentially how the thing might have been put together. If they find a device that has not been detonated, then lots of times there you can find fingerprints, or you can find other telltale evidence might point to a particular bomb maker. So it's very, very important from that perspective. From a response perspective, it helps to tell us what kind of injuries to expect in the type of casualties and the type of damage that way.
During the press conference that we just listened to, there were multiple calls for the public to get involved in any way that they could of sharing any audio or video that they took, any observations. And I guess that underscores two things of the importance of using the technology that we have, but also that there is very much an element where this really is becoming, I mean, not a normal part of our environment, but certainly more normal than it was.
Well, it's more frequent.
Yeah.
Again, as you see something happen, people watch it, they hear about it. Other people who are maybe intent on causing harm or terrifying people become maybe more empowered. They feel that way. Certainly, you know, terrorism has been around for many, 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 many years. It's just the United States is, I guess you would say, spared of much of this. But of late, once terrorists figure out what they can do, they can figure that they can do this here, and in many cases get away with it, if that's their intent, then, yeah, you can see more of it. Again, the intent of it is to cause panic in people, change how we do things, disrupt our way of doing business. And if you think about it, we've changed our life, our way of doing business, at least for the time being, all across the country just because of this event.
Rick Matthews is the director of the National Center for Security and Preparedness at the University at Albany. I thank you very much for joining us this morning, sir. A great pleasure to have you and having you share your expertise.
More than welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will be back in just a moment. Arian Pickus spoke recently with Massachusetts Congressman Richard Neal. We will hear that conversation after this short break.